Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, world. This is Pamela Elaine Lockridge. I'll be your host tonight for the Stop Child Abuse Now radio scan, number 2688-2688, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And the acronym to go and see our website is NAASCA.org. That's NAASCA.org. And we have a special guest tonight. Tonight is special guest night. And before I give out the mission for NASCA, I would like to give out the phone number so panelists can start calling in, 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And I'm going to go ahead and read our NASCA mission statement. We are a nonprofit 501c3 supported through contributions. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with two goals in mind. Number one, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing child sex abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone, and number two, offering hope and healing through the numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery for adults and children of child abuse. All right, so without further ado, I see that Benjamin's got a lot of support already coming up, and I'm going to open his mic. Hello, Mr. Benjamin Dubinek. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay. Yep. And you're from, say it, what's that city?
Pewaukee, Wisconsin, so just right outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Okay, yeah, United. Okay. I didn't know if it's Pewaukee or Pewaukee, but it's Pewaukee.
Correct, yes, Pewaukee, yeah.
Okay, and we're going to go ahead and spell your last name for people that may want to. You're on Facebook, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah,
your last name is spelled...
D as in dog, U, V as in Victor, E as in egg, N as in Nancy, E as in egg, C as in cat, K as in kite. Feel like I'm at the bank.
Okay. All right. So I just want to read a little bit of your bio to give people just a little, you know, opening or introduction to you. You were introduced to sexual life through one of your older brothers, and you were neglected and abused as young as 2 years old, and you were put into the foster care system.
Correct.
And I'm not going to go too far in it because looks like you had a biological parent. Let's say you had a biological mom and a foster mom.
That's right.
Okay, and who abused you, your dad or your mom?
It was actually my oldest brother.
Well, I meant you were put in foster care at age of two. So who abused you and neglected you at the age of two?
That's right. Yes, we were put in. I was put in foster care along with my other two brothers as well. We were put in separate foster homes at the age of two because of earlyhood child abuse and neglect. So essentially, for me, really, it was a lot of just what they really feel was a lot of neglect and just because I was the last of the three, and then my older brothers. My dad was an alcoholic, biological dad, alcoholic, and. I just remember and recall stories being told to me from them and just about instances of them being thrown down the steps and stuff like that. And it wasn't until, I know we're going to get into it, but ultimately it wasn't until I was 17 years old that I really started to recall really came to light that the experiences I was having were in fact sexual abuse, not only by my older brother, but then just instances where it was more of a voyeuristic experience with my biological mother, and then outside of that, it was just a lot of verbal abuse, and screaming and yelling, and just the environment. It was very intense and just lacking a formal sense of safety much of the time, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yes. But I want to kind of slow it down a little bit and go back and stay back for just a minute because, let's see, you were taken away at 2 years old, right?
Correct.
And put into foster care. All right. So how long were you in foster care?
I was in foster care for about seven, eight years, until the age of 11. Officially adopted at age 11. It was about a year and a half to upwards of 2 years prior to that, where we actually were officially, informally out of the custody officially of my mom, my biological mom, because I had convinced one day my second oldest brother to run away with me when we were set to go on a visit with my biological mom. So instead of going on the visit, we ran away from her, and it was that day that she finally conceded and said, if they don't want to go with me anymore, they don't have to. But anyway, yeah, I can get more into that when you further along. But yeah, that's essentially the story. As far as timeline goes.
Okay, so it says you were between both your biological mom and foster mom back and forth. And then when did your sexual abuse with your eldest brother that you can remember start? When did that start?
Yeah, it was about seven years old between that time period. Officially, I remember the first instance of the experience. I believe it was probably just 6 years old because I was in second grade when I started masturbating, which was a result of having had that experience and then it becoming more of an excessive experience moving forward from there. But yeah, that it's really just started in between those 2 years. And I, to tell you the truth, even to this day, I can't remember how long it lasted as far as, I remember it being, over the course of those couple of years, and those were towards the end of our experience of going back and forth between homes, and that officially ended at age 9. So it could have been between 6 and 8, or 6 and 8 years old, essentially. So 2 years.
Well, I just want to let you know this show is very laid back, and this is your show. You are the special guest. If there's anything that makes you feel uncomfortable, you don't have to answer it. We just always want to let you know that. And we do have a panel. Yes, we have three people that are supporting you, and besides myself, and we're going to go down the panel so they can make comments and interact with you and support you, okay? So whenever you're ready to take a break, we can do that. So
Okay.
Let's just go a little bit further in your bio. It says your mom would have various partners. She would frequently have sex openly, and it wasn't easy for you.
No, I just remember, it was an experience where, most often than not, a duplex or a one-bedroom apartment, usually for the three of us, and then including my mom, usually just that one bedroom. And I remember, observing that as normal kids were, as we were. And while she was doing that in the bedroom, and the door was wide open, and we would be just kind of minding our business as much as we could as kids, right? And just trying to keep ourselves occupied, doing whatever it is, whatever we wanted to do, whether we were outside or inside, wasn't really a bother. It was just, she was doing her thing, and that's it. That's kind of what it was like. So, that is true.
Did you feel something was wrong having that going on? Mm-hmm. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, there's one flashback that comes to mind, and I remember, the door open, I can see the hallway, I can see just the outline of the room even that I was in, and I remember just seeing that and just thinking like, I'm a very curious individual, and my brothers would tell you that I even had offshoot of that story is essentially I even took the wig off of one of our social workers because something seemed odd about her hair. So anyway, I got yelled at for that. But anyway, that experience, I just remember seeing it and just not knowing what was going on and just you're just taking it in, really feeling, that's a good question. The way I felt was, I guess, uncertain about the energy that was about. Like neutral to confusing a little bit and not understanding completely what it was all about, and sort of also feeling that it wasn't exactly the most appropriate thing. However, it was it was a little bit just uncomfortable, but I think it was I really just wasn't feeling a lot. I mean, it was just kind of shut that down a little bit, I think, even. Because it was just a little bit confusing on top of being a little bit awkward, but still curious as a kid. So all of the combination of those feelings, I think, were a sum of how that experience went for me.
Did you ever ask your mom about it, or did she talk to you about it at all?
Not at all, no. No, that was never a topic of discussion. I mean, it was, the most that would ever really happened. I remember we were sitting in a circle and we played cards. I mean, we didn't have any furniture, I don't think, in that apartment. And so we'd be sitting on the floor playing cards. And I think my brothers and I would joke around with my mom's underwear and just goof around, wear it on our head and just like joke around. But there was never any kind of discussion formally around that. It's, we're 5, 6 years old, however old that was, it's just, my mom's not really having conversations about her personal life at that point. Although she did mention actually, though, even during those experiences and those times, I'll say this though, those times were fun. I mean, we had a great time just laughing together. And so, developing some emotional ties, to each other. But she would talk about, as our, my brothers and I would ask questions about her mom and dad as you know, curious young children would naturally. She would talk about how she was thrown down the steps and as well by her father, who was also an alcoholic. So, yeah, that's about the extent of that, though, and the effect of all that.
So it sounds like your mother had some abuse from her past.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, she definitely alluded to, quite an abusive past. And I don't know, I think, yeah, even her brother must have been very abused as well, I can remember, because when we even went over to his house one time, and he would just get really loud and yell at us. And I just remember being afraid that he was going to hit us. And I think my mom even would she would have us leave, I think. I don't know if he was drinking or what, but before that he could really do anything. But I just remember it was kind of, you know, it's interesting. This is interesting because this is kind of bringing up some things. But just my uncle, I guess he would have been my uncle, he would give us all, every time we'd see him, and it may be just a handful of times, but he'd give us each like a Three Musketeers bar, because my mom used to call us the Three Stooges, because there were three of us and just knuckleheads running around, you know, and doing whatever. But so it was kind of interesting, because there was that nice piece, you know, that generous, that nice, make you feel good, here I'm your uncle experience. But then, like, maybe he starts drinking, or, you know, just later on in the experience, he starts yelling, and there's some kind of just uncomfortable feelings going on. And ultimately, I don't know if he would be abusive to any of my other brothers, but, it's just kind of vague. But at the end of the day, it's just was a conflicting experience. So that's just me processing right now. So I'm sorry if I got a little bit off, but I'm just thinking about that right now, though, as I'm kind of just in stream of thought.
No, and, that's perfect. However the show goes for you is perfect. You can't do anything or say anything wrong here. But it sounds like he was a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde. But that's how people are when they're alcoholics. They turn into a different person, don't they?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that can be, yeah, absolutely. And I think there was some talk about, like, maybe he was bipolar or something of the like. I'm not sure, but yeah, mm-hmm. I believe that. That's definitely a real thing.
Well, do you mind if we break to the panel right now?
No, no problem at all. Great. Yeah.
Okay. Go to Mark and see what comment or question he has. Mark,
yes,
you're
Benjamin.
On with Benjamin.
Yes, Benjamin, I just want to applaud you and for your courage to come on and tell your story, especially from the point that the fact that, you know, you're a male. And not too many males want to come on and tell their story. And that's what we're kind of encouraging other males. And if there are any listening tonight, you know, it's not wrong. It's not bad to tell your story. And I'm glad you're telling your story. And you're actually a pioneer, actually, as a man coming forth. It takes courage, no doubt. But I'm glad that you are and you're sharing your story, because from what I gather, you broke the cycle in your life, you know, from, you know, the abuse you had, and then it seems like your parents had, and now you're on a journey to breaking that abuse. And I just, glad that you're telling your story. And I just had one question. You said that your mom was doing this, open sex and your brother, were they going on at the same time? So were you being bombarded by your brother's abuse, and then you're witnessing this, your mom's activity? I mean, as a young child.
Yeah. Good question. Interesting as well, because timelines, I don't know that I've got timelines, solidified in my mind as far as how that went, but you know, it's kind of like all that childhood stuff is kind of in a similar bucket, it feels like. And it's just these handful of memories and then handful of these, you know, and that's it. And it's just like they kind of are just kind of mushed together. But I can imagine, I mean, it was just over the span of those years that, you know, I don't know how far your memory is able to track, per se, but, yeah. And so, I mean, I suppose it was in that time frame. I just remember that, you know, I was young and I probably, you know, kindergarten, first grade, second grade. I mean, that was the time frame that, you know, I really remember things happening. And, And outside of that, I mean, just, you know, on top of, you know, imagine, you know, I had the experience with my older brother and he was maybe abused in some other case, at some other foster home. I just think it was even more, the shame and guilt and fear even more embedded in as a result of having those experiences, because it almost didn't feel safe to bring it up. And so, so even further pressed down because of those other external experiences, whether it had been the shouting, the yelling, the swearing, the cussing, the screaming back and forth between my mom and her boyfriends or whatever they were. And then this, you know, all that, and then seeing, being exposed to those things, very much that I feel like it was probably even more ingrained, that it was fight or flight. And that's not something that was going to contribute to, flourishing as far as surviving. And, so therefore, you know, that's not something I would have felt comfortable talking about, if that makes sense. But, to answer your question, yeah, I just would say that, yeah, it's definitely probably in the same time frame.
Well, yeah, that's not, you know, as a young child, that's something that, you know, no child should be exposed to. You know, that just puts a double whammy on you. And any kind of abuse, any kind of stuff like that against a young child is definitely disheartening, in my opinion. And I'm sorry you went through that. But like I said, I'm glad that you're here and you're telling your story. And believe me, you know, I hope that you would kind of encourage other men you know that you know have been abused to come tell their story, because, you know, we need, you know, it's like a recruiting here, I'm telling you. We need men to come on and tell their story because, you know, this child abuse needs to be stopped. And men are the leaders, and I'm saying that you have a big voice, a powerful voice as men, sharing your stories and putting an end to this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I want to just say that too. I mean, just the second that I would encourage any man listening to that has ever experienced anything of the sort to absolutely come forth and feel free to share your story. And let me tell you something what that does. And so why would you? I mean, I got tons going on. There's plenty of stuff to do in life. Right. And,
right.
And you got enough is when you got kids and or you got this and that, but I'll just share this, that it's when you share your story, you set yourself free to some extent. So when you share your story, you set yourself free from it being a fearful or shameful experience to a freeing and more of this, actually exposing it to be something that you're not afraid of, you're not ashamed of, because you're telling yourself, hey, it's not my fault, and that this is, you know, a matter of circumstance. This is not who I am, but it's a matter, you know, it's a result of where I've come from and the experiences that I had, and especially being a kid, you know, it's their brains aren't even developed. It's a process. So I want to encourage any man to say absolutely. I would encourage you to share your story and say absolutely. Yeah, I will share my story because it will do those things for you. It will set you free. It'll make you feel more at rest and honestly empowered to feel even stronger about
that's
whatever
right.
It is you're changing in life. It'll make things easier. Because when you hold on to something, it creates a burden of unrest because there's undealt with emotions, there's undealt with all of those experiences. Now, you're not going to be able to go back to every single moment in your entire life and say, oh, I'm going to work through this and cure myself and et cetera. But these big moments, these ones that you can remember, the ones that fester in your mind, you say, oh, that's totally uncomfortable. Those are the ones you want to pay attention to, because once you overcome those, there may be some other stuff that comes up. But at the end of the day, you want to get on that track to exposing those things, but ultimately overcoming them and taking ownership of them and ultimately saying, hey, I'm not going to let these things hold me back. Like, these things aren't going to be a reason I worry about things in life. It's, I'm going to move forward. I'm going to be, you know, face forward, opposed to being held back. I'm going to be driven more by what I want to achieve than what I want to avoid. And, you know, you spend a lot of energy, science will tell you, you spend a lot of energy avoiding these memories, which you have, I mean, you probably have already experienced. But it's extensive. It's a lot of energy to hold, suppress a memory. Believe it or not, it takes a lot of actual mental energy. So absolutely, please share your story, write it down, share it with a friend. If you don't share it on the radio, you know, obviously that's okay. But it is a very freeing experience. It's not easy. I mean, this is not the most comfortable thing I've ever done, but it's absolutely, I think, necessary. And honestly, I'm feeling empowered by it because I'm not afraid of it. And, you know, in my line of work, I exploit myself in terms of my vulnerability because for the sake of other people feeling more comfortable to share themselves and then to also be healed. So it's a little bit of my own personal mission. So, yeah.
Okay. So, we're going to get more into that special story. But we have a special caller tonight. We have Carol from New Jersey, and she's the vice president of NASCA, and she has so much wisdom. She's been with NASCA 11 years, Benjamin, and you're going to glean a lot from what she has to say. One of the things that I remember that I want to speak to is about you witnessing domestic violence. That is another form of child abuse. So I'm bringing Carol on. Carol, you're on with Benjamin.
Yes, I am. And I want to thank you for what you were saying there, Pamela. You know, I applaud you for coming on. I absolutely do. And when you're a child and you're going through all of that turmoil, you see, domestic violence, there's so much screaming and yelling. Yeah, I heard you say that. There's a lot of yelling, and that's abuse right there. Trauma is trauma. And then to have witnessing your mother with her bad behavior, absolutely, and then having the problem with your brother, I mean, like Mark said, I mean, you were just, like, hit from all different sides. Now, you're handling yourself well, very well tonight. I'm proud of you,
thank you
for the way you're speaking. And also, too, and everything that you said is so true, so accurate. We cannot let it define who we are, okay? Because if we do, we stay stuck, and we never grow. And, you know, I can't, you know, tell you how happy I am that you are on tonight. And, yes, men are starting to come forward. They are. And I'm so pleased that they are, because just whether you're a little boy or whether you're a little girl, it doesn't matter. We all have the same feelings, okay? I'm sure there are times you were scared. I'm sure there are times you were, like you said, ashamed. And, you know, there's just so many things that we as children go through, for God's sake. You know, watching this and the beatings, the sexual acts, in my case, the incest. There was incest in my family, and also I was raped outside of my family. And it went on and on and on and on from 6 to 17. So, you know, our minds do get blown. My question to you is, did you ever, you know, go for therapy or anything like that?
So just in too, like what you were saying, like I did, but not specifically for any of this stuff. It was never for that. So I was diagnosed. Here's the thing, not to say that wasn't enough, right? I mean, the you know, being sort of coerced mentally into this sexual abuse or these sexual oral sex and stuff like that with my very own oldest brother. And as to say, if that wasn't enough, I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was two or three. So either way, they can't diagnose you until at least you're 7 years old now, and things are a bit different. But, being put on medication, such as Ritalin back then is what it was, and very early, I was naturally already seeing a psychiatrist. So it was, I did, but not for those reasons, and that's the thing. So it was, where is Ben at? What's the medication? What do we need to, how do we need to adjust it? Or do we need to try something else? Basically just masking the symptoms. And that's it. So, which worked for a while, but really came out in the later years, and starting in fourth grade. But I would say that what I wanted to comment on is what you said and how the impact of that being fearful and all these emotions. Absolutely. And I'll just share this because I think it's important that people understand even things like this stem from, they're good symptoms, signs to think, hey, is my son being abused, or is my child, maybe if they're wetting the bed excessively, or if they're, having night terrors or nightmare. I mean, these are things that I dealt with all the way up until, I was in, 11, 12 years old. I think I stopped wetting the bed when I was 11 years old. So, which is not uncommon from what I understand now. For a long time, of course, that created shame and guilt and like this out feeling, this sense of being an outsider and all of these things. So yeah, just wanted to put that in there too, as far as, just commenting on your last comment there.
Okay.
That makes
sense. Okay.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. No, it makes absolutely sense. And we many times do on the show go over the signs of child abuse, because so many people don't know it, And there's actually 10 signs that I always go over when I do presentations, or when I'm hanging out, and putting posters up and so forth in stores about the signs and symptoms of child abuse. So important that we get that out. There's all different ways of doing that. And by telling our story, or by writing books, or being in foundations, or being on radio shows, we're doing a lot more today. We absolutely are. 11 years ago when I started at NASCAR, I'm not saying we weren't doing anything, but things have certainly gone forward more with more people speaking and talking, and it's being looked at now more. And this is a very good thing. So welcome to the show. And now that you're telling your story, you are considered a NASCAR family member, and you can come on anytime you want, Monday through Friday.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. And I'm grateful that there is a community of people exposing these and being courageous enough to share it, because it's a thing. It's life. It's part of what life is in this world right now. And if you you can't shut it down. You got to expose it. And by exposing it, you bring attention. And by bringing awareness, you bring clarity. And if you get clarity, you can overcome. So, in that sort of way. So I thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Go ahead, Pam. Pam?
Hi, thank you, Carol. That was such a support for Benjamin. I was muted. Anyway, I'm going to thank you, Carol. I was going to bring on Doug from Maryland. Doug, would you like to support Benjamin in some way with a comment or question? Doug, are you just listening only tonight? That's fine if that's what you want to do. Okay. All righty. So we'll get back to your story, Benjamin.
Sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say this in regards to the therapy, because I know I cut off on a tangent there, but I was just going to say that as far as the therapy, it really wasn't truly exposed to me as far as being this you know, it wasn't in my mind a sexual abuse experience per se until I really, really identified it as such by education when I was 17 years old. So just to say, it really wasn't until I was teen that I really started to do work on this challenge. You know, to me, it was a challenge. To me, my life has been a challenge, right? So it's like, you know, you come from that place. To me, it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge for me to expose myself and trust other people and all that kind of stuff. If that makes sense. I just wanted to share though that I did get therapy and officially. It wasn't until later though that happened, and then I of course did some extensive work, and it was. And it was just really diving into those experiences, and then again sharing them was a huge, huge, just a pivotal point in my life. By sharing them to people, my peers, even in a group setting, was a powerful experience. It helped me to to really see myself for who I was, and not as somebody that was bad or this or that, but just as a true, authentic being and grounded. It helped me to get grounded, and I was more focused. I had more energy, and it's just life was better. My relationships with my mom and dad were getting better. They were starting to comprehend and understand some of the challenges I've had from the past as a result of this kind of stuff. So it really makes a big difference. So I would just say again, I mean, just to emphasize that point is just to, you know, continue to work on exposing those things. If it's not just, you know, if it's not with a group, it's with, you know, somebody you trust, and then obviously, coming to terms with yourself. So I would say those are huge mile markers in anybody's journey in this, and coming from this kind of any kind of abuse. So,
What do you think now about why your brother did that? Do you think that he was just curious, or
no? I don't. What do you think? He knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. Like I mean, it's like he made it a point to like show me this. Like he was just like, you know, showing me on like just having me watch him do it. Basically, masturbate. It was just masturbation. It started out, and then it was like, you know, him just kind of whispering like, hey, you know. Suck my dick. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, you know, so at first it was like this masturbation thing, and then it was just like, you know, and he must have been exposed to it. I don't hold anything against him. Like, it's not like that. Like, it's just though that, like, I knew he knew what he was doing. So that's why I think that's where it really started to make sense for me, that this wasn't just like a kid being curious. This was somebody having already been exposed to it, and then impressing it on sort of manipulatively, subtly manipulatively. So, like, that's what really, really gets me and helps me to understand it was a form of sexual abuse, because it wasn't me just like, hey, Joey, can I suck your dick? Like, it was like, yo, this was an ask. This was something that it was pre-thought, premeditated, and it was just kind of like, hey, I'm your older brother. Like, do this, you know? Like, and you want to, you know, as a younger brother, I just remember, and you can stop me at any time, but I'm telling you about my brothers and our dynamic. My brother, my middle brother, Peter, he was older. He's 14 months older than I am. And then Joey is 2 years older than I am. And, you know, I just remember feeling like an outsider the entire time. I was the youngest of the three, and they would often hang out together, play together. And I felt like I was always one step behind. And Peter, so the middle child, Peter, was always kind of the popular one. He was always the one that both Joey and I had just kind of desired his attention. And because of the fact, I think that he just was the most level-headed, only because, unlike Joey and I, he didn't suffer from ADHD or have ADHD. You know, say like suffer like it's a horrible thing, but like it's just like we had, me and Joseph and I had those things in common. So I think that because Peter didn't, he had something different about him that, you know, whereas he wasn't treated differently or what have you. And, we'd often just kind of fight for his attention. So so there was a certain feeling from me that I would, you know, I just kind of wanted, I was wanting to sort of prove myself to gain the attention of my brothers. And so that was just a natural, that's just, you know, a natural desire to please, you know. So outside of that, and, you know, I was sort of treated differently too, in the sense that because I wet the bed, I was never allowed to sleep in the bed with my mom. Like, we'd take turns. But Peter and my other eldest brother would take turns sleeping in the bed, and then the rest of us would sleep on the ground.
What is your relationship with your oldest brother now? You haven't have a relationship with him?
It's seldom to nothing, because he wound up not getting adopted with us. My foster mom, she did try. She couldn't. But ultimately, my brother Peter and I, we got adopted. So he wound up staying with my biological mom. The story goes, about a few years back, he did get in touch with me. Somehow he got my cell phone number, and he said that he was abandoned at 16. My mom started to smoke crack, and he just left when he was 16 and got into a gang. And of course, you know, as the story goes, down the hill he went and got a couple felonies, wound up in prison, and is now out of prison, living in the south side of Milwaukee somewhere, from what I understand. And that's just where it's at. I mean, we don't communicate a lot. I haven't confronted him on it, per se. I think maybe one time I said something, but I don't think I officially confronted him about it yet. But I do, that's something I intend to do. I suppose at this point, I just don't communicate. We don't communicate a lot. We've had lived different lives, and it's just kind of that's where it is.
What
right
it
now
is, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
He may be still toxic, and you know, and that relationship may not be something you need right now when you're in recovery. I want to read a little bit more about your biography. You said you went to 3 different high schools and you were asked to leave all of them. What'd you do? Why were they asking you to leave? What?
Oh, gosh, I hope, yeah, now people, you know, if you're listening, this is where it gets fun. So I was put into, you know, I went through that whole process, and then everything was normal up until the age of fourth grade. I just remember something, a girl that I really liked in fourth grade, she was moving away, and she was somebody that I would hold hands with in front of the line, and people would make fun of me and stuff, but we didn't care. And she moved away, and I don't know, for some reason, that was a big trigger for me. And I just remember that was the first time I got in trouble. That was the first time I made fun of the teacher, and I was sent to the principal's office. And I remember it. I remember the feeling. I remember it didn't feel good, but it definitely, I guess it got me some attention. Those issues were starting to come out. And basically just a cry for help to resolve some of this stuff that I just didn't feel comfortable about anymore. I just couldn't repress it anymore. So, and it wasn't consciously that I was thinking of these things. It's just the feeling inside of me is what brought about those actions. So anyway, I went to 3 different high schools. I moved on. I was class clown growing up in grade school. Then I moved on to just anything I could really do to get attention. That's kind of where it started in fourth grade. Moving into middle school, I started doing Chris Farley impressions and just becoming that, you know, a totally different identity when I would go to school. And there in sixth grade, started losing my identity, if you will, just doing anything for a laugh. And then that escalated to getting, you know, not so good grades and mediocre, but getting by. And then moving into high school, where now I'm separated. I was separated from the people I grew up with in that town, and I went to this school downtown in Milwaukee. And so the first time I got asked to leave, it was because I brought a BB gun to school, and in that time it was actually an airsoft gun. I was just kind of bringing it again. There's another attention-getting experience where you show it to your friend and, hey, this is cool. Is that real? No, but it's cool. And so anyway, somebody says something, you know, and in that time there was those school shootings were happening. So that was a big deal. And, I was sent to the principal's office and sure enough, they just said, you know, what were you going to do with this? And, you know, I just remember saying that it wasn't true, but I didn't want to get in trouble. I mean, I didn't want to go to jail, to be honest with you. So I said I was just going to hurt myself with it. And so therefore people were more concerned that I was going to do something to myself and not quite really understanding what are you going to do with this gun. They just kind of let it go. But at the end of the day, I was let go. I was asked to leave the school. And so I left. I mean, I was asked to leave and never kicked out, but asked to leave. Parents didn't know what to do, so they just said, okay, well, you got to go to military school. Went to military school. At this point, you know, I was back to the psychiatrist. They put me on some other medication. It was always some sort of Ritalin or Adderall. But anyway, so I'm going back. Now I go back my sophomore year. And this year I wanted to show people that I cared. I was getting these, you know, my parents would often, if I ever did anything or, you know, lied about something in these times, it was, you know, my parents would often think that I was, they would just really respond in like a way that was, I felt more ashamed, you know, I didn't really feel accepted and stuff, but to whose fault, you know, I was getting in trouble, but I don't think any of us really understood that there was a purpose behind the purpose. And it wasn't just because I wanted to, you know, get in trouble. It was because that there was something going on, but none of us could identify.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they just
kind of
in military school. That's okay.
Yeah. So did you have a lot of anger in that and you were trying to suppress that anger? Because sometimes you can be angry and you get scared that you might hurt yourself or others, you know, so you've got to suppress that anger and not let it out.
I don't think anger really for me came out until later on, like if anything, because I wasn't angry, honestly, to tell you the truth. I wasn't angry, Pamela. I was just very sad. I was very sad because I didn't really feel like I fit in at home. And then my brother, you know, he kind of got the normal stick. I mean, he did everything sort of correct. I mean, he wasn't the best student, but he wasn't worse. He's probably a B student, but got through school, no real challenges, none of that stuff, you know, normal friends. And so some of that just made me sad because I was never like, I connected. I mean, that was the biggest thing. There was a disconnect between me and other people. And I always, you know, just sort of felt isolated on the outside because I had these hidden, you know, shameful moments, experiences,
yeah,
and sadness that never was really exposed.
Oh,
and not even, yeah.
Never had to deal with anger whatsoever? Never? Ever?
Yeah, no, not true, no. Sometimes, you know, frustration, I think, is probably the biggest thing is frustration. Whether it's because, you know, I couldn't focus on something or treated differently or ultimately just it wasn't getting what I wanted and no matter how hard I tried. So but the anger I think was appropriate and normal, just rather just frustration. It was more frustration.
Yeah.
I don't think it anger like I'm mad, you know, like I'm not mad at my mom. I'm not mad at my brother. I'm not mad at them. I'm sad and I'm disappointed like this, you know, stuff had to happen, but it's like I know a bit
well,
better
that,
than that.
That's kind of amazing. That's kind of amazing. You're pretty unique in that. You know, I mean, a lot of people, I'm not going to forgive. I don't have to forgive to heal, you know. And they just want to hold on to that anger. And, you know, that's why I think you're so well, good mental place right now because you don't have all that, you know, garbage.
Well, you know, in all fairness, Pamela, you know, I, you know, fast forward, when I was 19, I went into psychology because of this fact that I realized that I felt as an outsider. I'd gotten into these, trouble, and I'd been through these schools, and, you know, I made it. And but at the end of the day, I knew that, you know, I was 19 years old, and I couldn't finish my first year in college because I felt blocked. I felt something was wrong. Something was off. I felt disconnected again. And ultimately that led to just moving back home and just getting a job, but I didn't want to just stop there. I always had this burden, you know, to want to succeed and to excel and somehow, there's just always a hope inside of me that someday things would be better and that I would do something with my life and that I was going to be something. I was going to be successful. I was going to overcome these things. I was blessed. Let me tell you this something. My mom bugged me all the time saying, hey, you always, people are going to think you had a horrible family. And I didn't have a horrible family. I mean, at all. I mean, I love my family. I'm better connected to them than I've ever been before now. And the reality is that, fortunately, I did get put into a home where, you know, there wasn't sexual abuse and stuff like that going on and all that stuff. And I got to see, you know, some good modeling in a lot of ways. At least, at the very least, it was you know, people taking care of themselves, and they would, you know, we'd have a lot of parents had, you know, friends over, parties, stuff like that. So somewhat of a positive experience to see, you know, what genuine connection can look like, you know, and not perfect, but good stuff, you know. And so I think a lot of just that exposure kept me open to the fact that, you know what, people aren't bad, but the reality is bad things happen. And that's the reality. So I think, you know, I'm just very blessed in the fact that I had the opportunity to be exposed to many different, you know, my mom has three other sisters, and all of them were close families and lived in the same area. And, you know, and I've had genuine experiences with all of them, and we often would get together and stuff like that. So I was exposed to a lot of different family models, and that I think was a big blessing, because that kept me from having anger, because I realized that, you know, my cousins have different challenges with their parents, and, you know, my other cousins have different challenges with their parents, and they complain about different things and stuff like that. So some sense of normalcy quote unquote normalcy I've seen. So I, you know, okay. We used a lot of humor. So
yeah. So you saw the good with the bad. Some people only get to be in the presence of bad for a long time. Well, and that's when, you know, that's when I threw and worked through and worked through. But it sounds like you had a lot of positive and good things in your life and support system to make you not have all that bitterness. So why did you go to five different colleges?
Five different colleges? Well, I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do, Pam. I was lost. So, okay, long story short, I went to three different high schools, got, you know, I went from C's and D's and F's in my freshman year. You know what happened there? Military school, straight A's, I get on the Dean's Honor Roll list. One day, I hyperventilate because I'm on too much Adderall and I'm not eating that much. And despite all the accolades I'm getting and the way that I look, and everything looks fine. But at the end of the day, I was depressed. I was, you know, cry myself to sleep and then act like everything's okay in the daytime. Moved on to then my final school, where I'd go to, which is even more strict than the academy. And that was a boarding school down in Georgia. And they ended up getting shut down, and it turned into a Christian camp because they were going against child labor laws and doing all this stuff. But that was even more intense. But anyway, of course, I was asked to leave there because I tried to start a mass refusal at the school because of how horrible they were. Anyway, that's a long story, and I won't get into it, but just know that I ended up getting my diploma, moving in and going from that space to my first college. So my first college was at the University of Dayton, Ohio. And crazy as it sounds, I got a partial leadership scholarship to go there. And it's like, where did that come from? because my mom was an alumni and my uncle was an alumni, and it's like, I don't know, I'm just messing. But at the end of the day, it's like I felt disconnected from those newfound relationships that I had with my mom and dad. So before I graduated officially from this school, I had reconnected with my – I had connected really for the first time with my mom and dad after really digging deep into those issue, that issue of that sexual abuse and that stuff, and having exposed that gave me an opportunity to connect with my mom and dad and to share some things in the safe environment with social workers and a social worker and that kind of environment for the first time in my life. So we built a bond in that time. So what had happened was I built a bond with my mom and dad. I was super excited about it. It helped to ground me. I was more energetic. I was really who I was, and I was, you know, feeling good and looking good and experiencing great ties and bonds to people. But then, you know, I go back to this school. I go to this school, and, you know, shit hits the fan. They give you 20 minutes on a phone call to talk to your parents a week. And if you say anything bad about the school, they'll make you hang up the phone. It's like, it was just as bad. They would tell my parents I was doing stuff that I, you know, I was getting in trouble. I was being, you know, just non-compliant and this and weird, just a bunch of weird, crazy stuff. I mean, non-compliant meaning I don't tuck in my shirt. I mean, it was really just kind of nasty. So my parents started to, you know, lose trust in me. And then by the time I graduated, they just kind of lost trust in me, and it was the saddest thing in the world because now I felt completely, again, back in that same boat of disconnect. And that's what really happened. So that's why I went to five different colleges, because I ended up going to this college, and then after one semester, just not being able to really take on that burden of being having to get through that semester, I just was so burdened, and I just couldn't do even the schoolwork to my full extent. Yeah. You know, I was drinking. I tried cocaine.
Yeah.
The first time,
it sounds like you were re-traumatized by that school. Is that the therapeutic boarding school that you're talking about?
Yes, it is. It's quote unquote a therapeutic boarding school. Yeah, they were going against child labor laws and that kind of thing. And they were embezzling money and stuff. And my parents ended up going in on a class action lawsuit with them. Not getting too much back, but just to share with you kind of the extent of where that ended up and, you know, to validate what I'm telling you, but it's not just me telling you, you know, a bunch of nonsense.
Well, let's go back to our panel. Do you mind?
No, not at all. Please.
And see what they think about what you told us, you know, from the last break. Okay.
Sure. Yeah,
Mark.
Yes, Benjamin. You know, I've been listening to your journey here through all these schools and stuff, and you know, a thought just came to my mind, and you can check me if I'm wrong, but you know, it sounded like you were pretty much like a class clown. You were looking for laughter. You know, were you think you were like depressed inside, and that's what was you were searching for? Because you said you weren't angry, but there must have been something going on that you were seeking, you know, attention. And
absolutely.
A lot of times depression will bring out that you want to be the funny man so you can get that good attention.
Yeah. No, you're 100%. And you know what the thing is? My mom would say, either you're in the funny bucket or you're not in the funny bucket. My dad's not in the funny bucket. I'm in the funny bucket. My mom's in the funny bucket. Peter, I don't know about Peter. But anyway, the reason I say that is because it was a very fine line. So it started out, again, in grade school, you know, eating, hey, I dare you to eat that. Okay, I'll do it. Attention, you know. And some of it became hard to decipher. By the age of when I was in sixth grade, it was really hard to decipher what was authentic and what wasn't anymore. It was like, what was the mask, what wasn't the mask. You know, I genuinely, you know, my mom would tell you, now I'm talking about my foster mom, you know, my adoptive mom telling you, she would say, you know, when you were young, 3-4 years old, you know, I would tell the most, you know, outlandish stories, and I would just make them up on the spot, and I would, you know, be in the room, and it was so funny, and have her friends laugh, And so I was, there was a sense of reality to me being this kind of person, the life of the party, she would say. You were always the life of the party as a kid. You were always, we would always dress you up in these, you know, little outfits, and you were the cutest kid, and everybody loved you, and it was awesome. So, you know, there was a real sense to me that, that was authentic and that ultimately loves to make people laugh and is an entertainer of a sort. But, it, yes, it did get very convoluted as time went on because, yeah, I was suppressing things that I didn't even know what it was about. And yes, that was an absolute truth that was happening. And it happened gradually more and more. And then yes, it escalated into depression because what happened is, and what does happen as we grow up, and if there's any students listening, kids listening, whatever, this is really, really important to understand if you're going through this, that to know that you're not alone and that this is a real thing. That it starts out, you know, being a class clown is cool. It's cool when you're in middle school, high school, even to some extent. But once you get past high school, I mean, even coming into the later years of high school, like it's not, being class clown doesn't serve you anymore. And people get serious even in starting in high school. They want to get in relationships. They start to grow up and, you know, you go through puberty and all this stuff. And you got to find some other outlet to get attention. You got to get some other outlet to mask this pain. And so if anybody's experiencing that, no, you're not alone. It became for me, yes, it did become a depression for me. And then yes, when I hit sophomore year, that went away. I was not class clown anymore. I was super serious. I read the newspaper, for crying out loud. I'm at military school, the only kid around there reading the newspaper. Some of it we had to do. I was reading the newspaper just so I could relate to my dad. Like, it was just the weirdest thing. And so, I mean, super serious, you know, getting straight A's, doing the thing, trying to look like this, you know, all-American kid. And the reality is that, you know, none of that was working either. It wasn't fulfilling, at least. It didn't bring further connection to people. It honestly just kept disconnecting because it's not really what I wanted, but I didn't know how to articulate it. You know, it's like sucks. But, yeah, I was depressed, 100%. Yes, it did become a depression, so... 100%.
Well, I have one quick question. I mean, what school did you finally graduate from?
Yeah, which one? As far as college?
So
just so you know, that route was, yeah, it was University of Dayton. Then I went back to just a technical school to get some prereqs. And then again, I tried another college down in North Carolina called Warren Wilson College. I left there, and then I had an experience of 20 when I was 22. I went homeless by choice, and then after that experience, I went back to school at another tech school, and then I went to finally to finish my years at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, which is the world's largest Christian school. And if you don't know it already, it's great school.
Right.
So, yeah. But just to give you that lowdown.
Well, that was my thoughts and questions.
Thank you, Mark. So, Benjamin, did you get your degree from Liberty?
I did, yep, 100%. Yep, got a life coaching degree from Liberty University.
That's right. You tell me about that. I'm going to bring Carol on, and she knows a lot and can talk a lot about what you were talking about covering up. And go, Carol.
Well, I think you're quite remarkable, but also, too, you know, a lot of times they say with the clown, you turn the clown the upside down, and what have you got? You've got the frown, okay? So I was a clown also. In school, very much so. And I did have a lot of hard times, you know, with the concentrating. You were going back and forth. Sometimes you couldn't concentrate. Sometimes your grades are good. Sometimes your grades are not so good. And there's so many things that happened in your life, okay? So you were filled a tremendous amount with depression, and you were a sad child. I was a sad child. A lot of times, many of us are sad children. Because in the back of our mind, even if we're pushing it way back in our mind, okay, what we're doing is we're trying to run away from self and our own feelings and also our own disappointment. You mentioned the word disappointment some time ago, disappointment in your family and the fact that you had to go through what you went through, like with the sexual abuse. You were not mad. You were disappointed. There's so many things that you're saying here that are very relevant to child abuse, and everybody's story is different. However, we all many times feel the same. And so with the depression, did you ever try to commit suicide? Were you suicidal in the sense that you would, you know, actually kill yourself or think about it?
You know what? Complete transparency, yeah, I thought about it. But I never thought about going through with it. I mean, hopefully that makes sense. And it's, I did one time, my mom was driving, and I just said, me and my mom, I love my mom. Let me shout out to my mom. She's listening. But, you know, and me and my mom have a good relationship in the sense that we just share a sense of humor. And humor has always been something, not to backtrack, but to say that it's been an authentic, real thing in our family. And specifically for me and my mom. And I will say, though, that my mom and I, all to say that me and my mom would have some battles, some like verbal battles in terms of, you know, challenges and stuff. So just one time I remember I just threatened to, you know, I threatened to jump out of the car. But, I mean, even that felt a little weird. So, you know.
Excuse me for your phone. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. It's funny. It's like, yeah, I just remembered. And I think at that point, you know, I know it was uncomfortable for my mom, and obviously you don't want to hear your kids say that, and it's just like, but I just remember, you know, things would get so escalated sometimes in terms of our back and forth and our matches. It's just that it was just so emotions were so high because, you know, you're trying to block out that stuff. You don't know what you're taught. You don't know what you're blocking out. And then to feel safe enough to bring it forth is just like, it's so tough because it's like, you got to keep moving. You know, you got school the next day. What are we talking about? How long are we going to be talking for? We have no idea what we're getting into when we dive into emotions, like true emotions, especially in my family. I mean, my dad worked a lot. He wasn't, I mean, nobody in my family talked about their emotions. I much less don't, and even still to this day, don't know a lot about their past. I mean, as far as, you know, how they grew up and stuff like that. It just wasn't common or conversation, you know? So, very much close, but never, the closest I think that ever happened to me around that was just blacking out, maybe two or three times. I took some cough medicine and I drank a bunch of I don't know what I drank, just alcohol, I think. And I just, I wound up just passing out and just getting real screwed up on the lawn and then passing out. But that's about the extent of it. That's probably the most depressed time I've ever been. And, So it just shows, I mean, how horrible is that when you can't express emotions? I mean, let's just get down to it. I mean, the reality is this is suppressed emotions that are not being experienced and therefore coming out in all these different directions, whether it's bad grades, whether it's getting in trouble, whether it's lying, whether it's stealing, whatever it is, these things are symptoms of a simple thing that if we normalized it, could make things a hell of a lot better in our society.
That's right.
I'm getting preachy and I'm passionate about this side of it because, you know, this is what I do for a living now. I mean, this is what I represent. This is what I preach about. This is what I speak about because it's so crucial that because it could have saved, it'll save you years, money, time, energy, losses, and pain and disconnection. I mean, just years of it. And anyway, I'm guessing I answered the question.
Well, yeah, no, you're doing fine. Now with the emotional angle that you're speaking about, all families are different, okay? So in my family, you didn't dare cry, even if you were being whipped. You didn't dare express love, even. That was there was there was no emotional, you know, you weren't allowed to be emotional at all. And like in my case, if they caught me crying, and many times I wanted to cry, of course, who wouldn't be fearful and scared and sad, very, very sad. You know, if they caught me crying, they would send me outdoors, and it didn't matter if it was 2 degrees out. I was outdoors. It didn't matter if I had a jacket on. I was outdoors, okay? So, to not being, to be so stifled, okay, with our emotions, we know in our heart and we know in our minds that things are not right, okay?
Right.
Sometimes children might say, well, maybe I'm partly to blame, because a lot of times we think, well, maybe I could have done this, or maybe I shouldn't have done that, or maybe if I was a better kid, maybe they would have treated me better, or maybe they would have loved me. They would have loved me. Or maybe they wouldn't have done these things to me. So many times what you're speaking about here, too, is you said that you felt different. You would go into a room of people, and many times, or into a new school, or wherever the situation was, and you would feel different. I used to feel dirty, okay, because I felt like I was dirty, okay, and I certainly felt like I wasn't a part of the scene, and so that's where my clown would come out a lot of times, yes, to draw in that attention. I'm basically a funny person anyway. I'm somewhat like you. I have a good sense of humor. I love to laugh, and I love to make people laugh. But I can be dead serious also, too, because there is that other side of life. So laughter is good, and sadness is made to be felt. And it's okay to feel sadness, and it's all okay also to have some sort of anger. I had anger against my family. I had anger against society. To this day, I have anger against society because I don't feel like society, and I certainly, the Justice Department, the system, and everything else, the courts, everything, I don't think they're doing enough of what they should be doing. I could go down with a list. And as far as child abuse is concerned, it's never going to stop. It's never going to go away. But what we can do is we can raise awareness by raising our voices, which you're doing tonight, and you're doing a fine job. But we have to get out there that it's okay, like you were saying, to feel. It's okay to cry. It's okay to laugh. It's okay, you know, to fail. It's okay to succeed. All these things are a part of life, okay? All these things are a part of life. But we were not meant to be put on this earth to be abused, okay?
That's right.
And that's not acceptable. So I want to get into, and we'll probably be doing that pretty soon anyway, into the type of work that you're doing. But everything that you're saying is very, very much in line with child abuse, you know, because we do feel sadness. We do feel like we'll put ourselves in risky behavior. I certainly did. I was out on the streets. I ran away to get away from people who were abusing me at home. You know, I know what it's like to be cold, hungry, and all this other stuff, and to steal for clothing. But I had to steal for clothing even when I was at home. And I came from a wealthy home. They just didn't like me. Won't get into that now. But the point is, all these abuses that all of us go through, they do something to us. They chip away at us. They chip away at us spiritually, mentally, emotionally, psychologically. And we have to work on those areas of our life on a daily routine, you know, to it'll come out in different ways. Some people do drink and drug. I certainly did. And the cough medicine you're speaking about is codeine AC, by the way. All right. That was back in the day. That's what people were drinking. They were drinking the codeine AC. Okay. And yeah, I tried it, and it closed my throat up. I couldn't breathe for a minute. I said, enough of that. So I never did that again. we're survivors. That's what we are.
That's right.
And it doesn't even matter if people have their PhDs or they don't have their PhDs. It doesn't matter if they quit school. It doesn't matter. If we have a voice, I certainly, you know, I did quit, but I went and got my GED. I didn't care. I needed to get out of that house, and it didn't bother me. And then I went to school from there, because every job that I applied for, Benjamin, I applied for jobs that I could relate to, because I figured I would do a good job at what I was doing. And they sent me to school. So I lucked out. I lucked out. All right, that's the way
that's
I look
awesome.
At it. That was excellent. Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, and I've worked in detox centers and as a counselor and so forth. I mean, all kinds of stuff. But the point is this, all right, we're survivors, we're standing.
Right.
We can relate certainly back to the bad days, those days. And many times, by the way, people do not talk about, you know, their abuse until they're in their 40s or 50s.
Really?
That's the norm. Now, me, I wasn't like that. I have a big mouth. Ask them, they'll tell you. And I started complaining when I was 7 years old, but no one would listen. And no one cared, okay? So, but I still tell people, for God's sake, the younger you do tell, okay, like usually someone, today especially, that's what I'm saying. Things are a little bit different now for the most part. They're starting to change. Today you do have teachers you can go to because they're mandated reporters. You do have some youth groups in the churches, you know, where some people will help you. I say I used the schools before that, though, because there's been so many problems. But there are places where kids can go. They can go to the Guardian Angels. I know them well, and they help kids. There are groups out there now where kids, if they want to, you know, speak about things that are happening to them, there are places to go. But when we were growing up, there were no places to go. So I think that we went through so much anguish and so much pain, and you kept saying you cried yourself to sleep at night in one of the schools that you were at, and because you felt this pain and this anguish. And that's so what I would do. And I would sleep with the rosary beads under my pillow, and my mother was an atheist. That was a no-no. You don't find rosary beads under my pillow, honey. But she found them, and then she made fun of me for weeks, and I would rather have been hit than what the things that were coming out of her mouth. So all the things that you saw as a child with the domestic violence, with the fighting, your mother with your boyfriends or whomever, as you worded it, or what I saw as a child, domestic violence too, anything that causes trauma is child abuse. That's it. And so we have to work our way through it. And you did it magnificently, because what Pamela said is quite right also, because you did have people that were the normies, okay? They weren't perfect, like you said, but you did see what life was supposed to maybe be like. And you said
right.
that you wanted so badly yourself to someday, you know, maybe to be like that, to make something of yourself and to be
right.
maybe even happy like those people. So you had something to compare to. Right. And I was a people watcher.
Yeah.
Yes. I was a people watcher. And that's how I learned, too. So I want to hear more. Yeah, I want to hear more of your story and get into what you're doing today. Okay.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, Benjamin, let's talk about what you're doing now. And you had given me a website or a link, and people can get that link to an event coming up. So let's talk about what you're doing and then what this event is coming up.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So right now, I became a life coach, and I was in sales, you know, for 3 years, and I realized that, you know, one day is no day unless you make it that day. So that's when you take that leap to become what it is you believe you should become. So anyway, that's just a little word of insight. But, so right now I run an organization called Wolf Warriors Organization, and the founder of the Christian Life Blueprint Training System. And, yes, I'm a Christian. And that story itself stems from the age of 22. I went homeless by choice because, now again, I say choice because I had a choice. I had my parents asking me if I'd live with them, and I had my grandparents asking me if I would live with them in Florida. So I had options. But that sad, wounded child, very exhausted at that point, realized that, you know what, there was nobody who was going to take responsibility for my life and nobody who was going to figure this out unless I did. So my sole goal of that was to find true love. That was a very big motivator of mine, but also to become a well-integrated person like I had felt at one point when I was 17, as I mentioned earlier. And so that was the whole drive behind that decision. And then within 2.5 months of going homeless by choice, giving away all my stuff, my phone, the internet, all that stuff, I had found Jesus. I found Christ, and I became a Christian, a born-again Christian, I guess, if you want to call it that. And I grew up Catholic, but anyway, so yeah, so there is a Christian aspect to me, obviously Liberty University, Christian University, and that whole thing. So I became a Christian life coach. In about 6 months into that, I realized that, you know, this whole thing, people, whether they strive to have better relationships, they strive to have better, they have better, better job, a better career, a different career. If you want to be an entrepreneur, they want to accomplish something. Better relationships, want to experience emotions that they don't normally experience. Everything that you want to accomplish comes down to one thing, and it's that, it was a common theme, and I had to just come to terms with it, and it made me upset because there wasn't support around this. And what it is it's the very reason I created what's called the Christian Life Blueprint Training System, and essentially is a Christ-centered way for people to get into alignment with who they really are. So getting grounded first. And taking that first step to say, okay, this is where I stand today. This is the gospel. This is, you know, Jesus came, you know, I am accepted right where I am today. This is who I am in the three areas of life. Okay. I call them the three C's. It's the connection to yourself on the inside. That's your emotions, your mind, your intellectual life, your character, and then connection to your outside. So that's your finances, your career, your health and fitness, you know, those types of things. And then the connection to others. So those are your relationships, and those are your family, your friends, stuff like that. So that's the first step, is essentially identifying where do you stand today, where do you want to go, and then ultimately getting the third step is just actually implementing. So getting the strategy and resources, ultimately just the tools that you need to be successful. Within that process, we give people the education that they need to know, not just sporadic things like, hey, let's focus on love today and let's have a sermon about this and that. It's specifically directed as to how are we going to be successful in Christ, and how can we actually make that practical? So we're going to give you the what you need to know. I call them the seven biblical laws of success. So we teach those things, It's amazing. It's just amazing. And if you line it up with Eastern philosophy, there's similar terminology that they use, but there's so much in the Bible that we don't pay attention to that's very, very important. And it's at the core of how to operate as a human being, how the world works. So we share that as part of the implementation process, the tools to be successful, and then also the seven habits of what I call divinely effective Christians. We share that, and it's some of it's common, some of it's not, but this is the core stuff people need to know to be successful, so they don't have to waste time doing what I did for 15 years, going up and down, back and forth between schools, not, you know, having all these challenges that could easily be taken care of with just one simple thought. And that thought is, you know, a vision of going forward, you know, hope, you know, Jesus. If you guys aren't followers, that's okay. Or Christians, that's okay. But this is where I stem from. And this is part of the business. So, which is why I'm sharing it. But ultimately, you know, Jesus had, you know, he told his disciples to go forward and not to look back. And it's not that therapy and all these things aren't important. They don't have any purpose. It's that we should be trying this one thing first, and that's to have a vision forward. Jesus said, I don't do anything that I don't see my Father do in heaven. So it's very, very crucial that we first decide what it is that we see God doing and bringing us into moving forward. first follow him, and then let's try these other things as a result. So anyway, that's the process I take people through as part of my business. The other part is Christ Confidence Coaching, and that's where I support people in ultimately creating that abundant life that they ultimately want. But I really stem in creating that, helping them around their blocks and accelerating the process of healing and breakthrough so that they can feel connected. You know, what am I doing about the challenges that I've come from? It's getting connected to yourself, to God, to others. And ultimately, from those relationships stems an amazing life of experience of freedom and ultimately getting to the desires of your heart, which are ultimately the career of your life, the relationship that you want. All of that stuff stems from this place called relationship. So if you don't have connection, if you're feeling disconnected, it's absolutely a place that you can plug into. And the vision is to make it the opportunity accessible and affordable to most people and to create plants of wolf warriors throughout the United States. So anyway, that's a little bit about what I do and what I'm doing about my challenges and my past and this whole, the results of people having gone through these sensitive issues and maybe not so sensitive sometimes. Sometimes people are just challenged and just want somebody in their corner. You know, and this is a good place that you can get that. So, yeah.
So, Benjamin, how does somebody find this, find you? Do you have a website?
Sure, absolutely, yeah. Right. If you just go to, just connect with me on Facebook. I mean, I think that's the easiest way. Right now, I'm the guy, working to set all the appointments and do all that kind of stuff. So just feel free right now. We're in motion to create this into a bigger organization and to bring on some other coaches here in the next couple months. But at the end of the day, just text me on Facebook. I'm not going to make it difficult. In fact, I'll share with you my phone number. I mean, my phone number, if you want to write it down, it's 828-707-8945. 828-707-8945. Or again, look me up on Facebook, Benjamin Anthony. I'm wearing a suit and anyway, but you can look up my last name too. As we mentioned earlier, it's Duveneck. So that's my last name, Duveneck. LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, those are all the places that you can reach me. So, yeah, feel free to reach out. No big deal. And then if you just want to email me, it's just my first and last name at gmail.com, BenjaminDuveneck@gmail.com. Yeah.
Awesome. And if they need to get in touch with you, they can call NASCA and I can give them some information. All right, we've got 2 minutes left before I end the show, and I'd like for you to leave a nugget. Just leave a nugget, like a sentence or a couple sentences or a motto or a quote, whatever you want to leave the audience with.
Awesome. I will say this, that, the Bible says that those without a vision perish, and that means suffer. So I want to share, whether you're a Christian or not, that if you don't already have a vision in place and you don't have any support to get there, you're going to want to get those two things. I don't care if you're an orphan. I don't care if you got $1 million. You need to have a vision. Otherwise, you're going to continue to suffer. That vision itself can pull you forward more than anything else. It's so powerful. The amount of stories that you hear from Kevin Hart to Rocky to anybody you think about that has come from nothing and has become something, it's because they had a constant focus. And the only way they were able to focus is because they had a vision. Without a vision, you're going to perish, meaning to suffer. In the Latin, it means to suffer. So if you don't want to suffer, get something to focus on and actually create action strategies to get there and then ultimately get the support that you're going to need to be held accountable. You're 77% more likely to accomplish it if you do those two things. So anyway, I'll leave you with that, and I'll share that with you. And God bless everybody. It's been a privilege and honor to share this time with you. And so thank you so much.
Oh, Benjamin, we just thank you for coming on and sharing your story and especially sharing the hope, okay? And we know that people are going to connect with you. And keep us informed about how many people are connecting with you after your show. Remember, you have the link. And I want to say goodnight. Yes, I want to say thank you from the panelists. And I want to say goodnight from NASCA. And like Penelope says, if you see something happening to a child that you don't think is right, say something or call a hotline. And we thank you and goodnight from NASCA.
Thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.